From UFOs to psychic powers and government conspiracies, history is riddled with unexplained events. You can turn back now or learn the stuff they don't want you to know. A production of iHeartRadio.
Welcome back to the show. My name is Matt.
My name is Noel.
They call me Ben. We are joined, as always, with our super producer, Seth the Shadow, Nicholas Johnson. Most importantly, you are you. You are here, and that makes this stuff they don't want you to know. Today, we're sort of talking about spies, according to some people, one in particular. And whenever we examine the world of spies, we have to realize that the life of a spy is so often glamorized in the world of fiction. Like, you hear the phrase spy, or especially secret agent, a lot of people immediately think of James Bond, who we have already, I think, very clearly established is a terrible example of how to be a spy. He's day drunk, uses his real name, says it at every opportunity. His OPSEC is terrible. Real spies are nowhere near as glamorous as James Bond. You know, they run the gamut in appearance, socioeconomic level, motivation. Some are in it for money. Some are being blackmailed, you know, the Russian technique of kompromat. And some really believe in a particular ideology. Some people, you know, if the spy masters are doing their job right, some operatives aren't even sure who they're working for. And this leads us to the strange, twisting tale of a man named Jeffrey Allen Lash. And full disclosure,
wow, I really thought you were going to say Ben Bolin. But okay.
you wound me, Matt. This we wanted to say, heads up, this may end up being a two-part episode because there is a lot to this story. And there are going to be some surprising things this story as well. We're not going to approach this in a linear way either. There's a bit of a pastiche approach. So our story really begins with Jeffrey's death. Here are the facts.
In the summer of 2015, the police were called to a residence in the Pacific Palisades, a particularly posh neighborhood in Los Angeles. Residents in that area were concerned because they'd noticed a seemingly abandoned SUV that was parked in the same exact spot for 2 weeks. And then the police received a call. Like we said, there were some concerned citizens that saw this abandoned car. And that led to a search where authorities found a corpse inside the SUV and began setting out to piece together, you know, what could have happened to lead to this man being in this SUV in this very fancy neighborhood.
Oh, and it's a twisted story. It is a very weird way that they even got to that SUV in the first place. This is just to put this out there, in the same neighborhood, you've got like real Hollywood elite. We're talking your Reese Witherspoons. And what was it, according to the Hollywood Reporter? There's one other person mentioned, J.J. Abrams, hanging out in this area.
Who is not, so far as we know, related to this case by anything other than geography. So part of our mission here at the front is to clear the name of Reese and J.J. You're welcome. You're welcome. They're big fans of the show. So, yeah, this is not a neighborhood where this sort of stuff ever happens. And as we'll find, the neighbors grow increasingly obsessed with the story. Astute listeners, you'll note that we're talking about a body being in a sealed car, wrapped in blankets for 2 weeks during the height of summer. So the decay is extensive here. The corpse is no longer one that you could easily identify, probably by just looking at where the face used to be. They eventually do identify this man. He is a man known to neighbors in the area as Bob Smith. That is not his real name. His real name is Jeffrey Allen Lash. And he turns out he is living at a townhouse, or was living in a townhouse, just up the street. So the investigators head to the condo. And in the condo, they find You know how, for anybody who's a fan of video games, sometimes you'll be playing a game and you'll burst into like a secret room and you'll find this cache of all this cool stuff, you know, med kits or health potions, depending on the genre, cool weapons, spells, mm-hmm. stuff like that. That's what they find in this domicile. They find so many guns, more than 1,200. Like,
and we're,
yeah, not trash guns either. Like high-end pistols, shotguns, rifles, all in all. Lawyers later estimate, and their estimation does become important here, lawyers later estimate there's about $5 million worth of guns.
Wow. And you may think, well, maybe this person is just a gun collector, right? Maybe they go to these gun shows and sell guns or something like that. It's just the guns, right? Oh, no. There was also ammo.
Yeah, exactly. Around 6.5 tons of ammo.
Yeah.
And a little more than $200,000 in cash, $230,000 in cash. Not to mention, like, some serious, you know, like, doomsday kind of weaponry, right? Like bows and arrows and knives. And then you had models of bears and lions that were used as shooting targets.
Yeah. Yeah. You always get in these situations, right? It's important to be prepared. Quick note about that 230 grand. Those were in older bills, which is an interesting detail. So these weren't like, you know, bills printed in the 2010s or something. They were from the 1980s. So we've been sitting on them for a while.
And does that maybe indicate, well, I see what you're saying, but it's also like, it could mean they were from various sources and could have been like drug money or some sort of illegal income stream.
We don't have to get into it yet, but for my money, that was the stash that Jeffrey Allen Lash had since the 80s. This is my belief.
Ah, the Lash stash.
Yes, yeah. The Lash stash. Not facial hair in this case, but yeah, he was more of a beard guy. He had kind of a light salt and pepper beard mm-hmm. at the time of his demise. So the police are freaking out. They also find a bunch of explosives. And imagine if you are one of the well-heeled residents of this neighborhood, you might have noticed the weird car. But as we'll see, you are already very familiar with weird cars if you live in this neighborhood. And you walk out one day and it looks like one of those scenes from E.T. where the government agents shut down the house. There are police everywhere. Some of them are weirdly enough wearing overalls. There's also a bomb squad.
They actually had to evacuate quite a few of the residents.
Right. Yeah, they had to take – this was hazmat level territory, and they were going through this huge arsenal of weapons and explosives, and they have to do it really carefully because it's not uncommon for people who have collections like this to also have some safeguards. You know, mm-hmm. maybe not lethal stuff, but you never know until you're in the thick of it. And the one thing that baffled them about this – is this massive amount of guns. This guy's lying to neighbors about his names. But all the guns are clean. And we'll have to reiterate this again, but this is important. All the guns are clean. None of them are dirty. They all have serial numbers. They were purchased legally over time. But some of these chemicals, these explosives, are just too unstable to transport. So the police shrug and they're like, we have to explode these. That's all we can do with these. Mm-hmm. We have to have a party. And there are literally, folks, we're not being hyperbolic. There are literally so many firearms. There's so much stuff in here that it took the police days to move everything. And they were moving it truckloads at a time. And everybody at this point, neighbors, police, reporters with a good bloodhound nose for weird stories, everybody is wondering, what the hell is going on? What happened here?
Exactly. Just a quick note before we move on. There are a bunch of pictures that you can see of everything we're describing here. There was, I think, at least one reporter who lived right in the area, or a photographer for a news outlet who lived in the area, who was snapping shots of all of this while it's going down. And there's one shot, at least according to a freelancer who wrote for Playboy, there's a picture of that cache we mentioned, the older bills laid out on a table in a garage. there were so many guns and other things that they were dealing with at the actual house. They had to go to a neighbor's house and garage to do the money counting and a bunch of other sorting of materials.
Just yeah, I was crazy. Thinking that just like the effort to catalog all this stuff probably would have been massive.
Yeah. So, yeah. But like you said, Ben, what the hell happened?
What happened? What happened? Yeah, police are trying to piece together how this dead man ended up in an abandoned vehicle wrapped in blankets. That's not something you do after you die for yourself. And they were trying to figure out why he had so many weapons, how he got them. This is a real bummer for some of the cops because they have to go back and essentially do a background check on each and every firearm. So that's somebody's horrible job for the next however long. It's not just one night. And neighbors are flocking around while they can, and they're saying, they're talking to the police about this guy, and they're like, oh yeah, that's Bob, skinny Bob, Bob Smith. He's interesting. He's kind of an intense dude. He's really into guns. And he said he worked for you guys. Well, for the FBI or the CIA, I'm not sure, say the neighbors. And the police are thinking, okay, well, that's something, because if they work for the FBI, we will be able to tell, right? We'll be able to verify that. And then we pulled some statements from neighbors, because you can tell that they're like, now this is the number one mystery in the neighborhood. Because again, this doesn't happen in an area like this. One neighbor said, he'll say crazy things to people, like he does night missions swimming to Catalina, and he would come and he would tell us that he was going to show us his self-defense moves, which has such big, like, Mac energy from Always Sunny in Philadelphia.
It also, I mean, I don't know, Ben, I'm just, it's got a little bit of Ben Bolin energy, too. I know you love a good night walk, so a night mission seems right up your alley.
Right, but I'm not teaching people martial arts.
Swimming to Catalina.
You've taught me some good power moves in the past, like the elbow grab, you know, that's almost the same as martial arts.
Oh, thanks, man. Yeah, the key is it's a rest. You just turn. It's such a weird thing to do.
But, just kind of graze. Yeah, exactly. Exactly.
So then we have a new character in the scene. These are all just the facts, by the way.
Yeah.
This is why this might end up being a two-parter. So shortly after the investigation hits the press, there's a guy named Harland Braun. He's an attorney. He's representing a woman named Catherine Nebron, or Catherine Nebron Gorin. This attorney comes forward and he says, look, I'm representing Nebron Gorin. She is Jeffrey Allen Lash's fiance. And I contacted the police on her behalf to tell everyone where to find the body. And I also wanted to alert them to the massive amount of weaponry at this residence, because he was concerned. Now, Braun is an interesting character. He is a veteran criminal defense attorney. For people in the audience who care about celebrities, you might recognize him from his work with Dennis Rodman, Roseanne Barr, Gary Busey, and perhaps most infamously, Robert Blake.
Mm.
So he's heard a lot of war stories. You know what I mean? He is in the true crime world. But even for Braun, this story Catherine is telling him is downright bizarre.
You know what? I think maybe we should hold that info, that bombshell, for a quick word for our sponsor. Then we'll be right back.
Good call. Let's build the tension a little bit. All right, we're back. Here's the scoop. Here's what you're hearing if you're one of the police officers who's stuck on this case. So Lash told his fiancée that he was an undercover operative for a top secret government agency, and that, as a result of his work, he and she and everyone they interacted with were under surveillance constantly by the same agency that he was working for. So this mystifies the lawyer, Braun. And this is, by the way, not the whole story yet. because we're still in the realm of the facts. This mystifies Braun. And he says, you know, the problem here is that the truth may be unbelievable. She, meaning Catherine, will talk to LAPD, but would anybody believe it?
Does she really believe it? Did he really believe it? These are the questions, folks.
These are the questions. It was going one way or another. It was going to be a long night at the police station. It was going to be a series of long nights at the police station. They had to answer several questions. Who was Jeffrey Alan Lash? Who did he actually work for? How did he die? Here's where it gets crazy.
So according to this fiance, Nebron Gorin, Lash and his friend were shopping at a farmer's market on Wilshire Boulevard in Santa Monica on the 4th of July when Lash started to feel some kind of nasty symptoms. He was feeling hot and sick in the parking lot. And as Braun told the LA Times, the group tried to cool Lash down with some ice, but he passed away.
Yeah, I believe there was... it was dry ice as well, like that they were trying to use. They were trying to very quickly cool him down.
They would call a doctor on the scene, too, a Reiki practitioner. This is unusual, right? We're thinking the reports vary. I found one report I think we all read where they said this occurred on July 3rd instead of the 4th, but it was around this time. It was like the first week of July. And you're wondering, well, I've been in situations where one of my friends isn't feeling well or they're injured or something. I know what to do. I would call paramedics. Or if you live in the U.S. where most people try to avoid an ambulance ride, you would drive them to the hospital. But due to their belief that Lash is a spy and more than a spy, they held off. He had given his close associates explicit instructions on day-to-day life, like with Nebron Gorin. He was kind of running her life, and he was doing this with a couple of different people. And he would say, you know, very cryptic things like, don't ever, he didn't want a paper trail of any sort. He didn't want to be involved with authorities. He had earlier, before his death, damaged four cars in an accident and was adamant that no one contact insurance companies, no one report anything. And the next day he came back and he paid the owners of all four of those damaged vehicles in cash, baller. But they knew, and they were to a degree, they were afraid of Lash. That's very important. So they did not call the paramedics. They called this doctor who was a friend. And then he later told the local paper that he spent 90 minutes trying to revive Lash in the passenger seat of this SUV while Nebron Gorin is outside in the parking lot freaking out.
Have you confirmed who that friend was? The stuff I was reading, nobody had identified the friend who was a doctor.
Apparently, they called the mother of an employee of Nebron Gorin, who we will meet shortly.
Okay, gotcha.
And it's true, the fiance supposedly was, you know, in shock and grieving and, you know, openly weeping and didn't know what to do with the body, but assumed, based on what she did know, that the agency, whatever unnamed agency this might be, was watching at all times and would potentially come for the body, knowing that he had died. And she later told a friend that Lash had actually left very specific instructions on what to do. And the first rule of what to do when this guy died was don't call the authorities and leave him in the car wrapped in blankets and get the hell out of town and let his handlers or minders take care of the body, which I don't know. Like, guys, this seems unusual in general for any kind of spy. What I mean, like, if you're just like living a civilian life, or maybe you're undercover, I guess. Like, is there really instructions on what to do with your body if you die of natural causes?
I would say no, not necessarily. What I would say is, in this specific case with this specific individual, there may have been a reason why Jeffrey either believed that an authority would want his body, or he had convinced somebody that an authority might want his body for a very specific reason that I don't want to spoil right now.
Or maybe he had convinced himself of this. It seems that like there might be a little bit, this guy might have been a little kooky.
Yeah, it's quite possible that we're looking at a Connecticut Yankee in King Arthur's Court moment. It's the Mark Twain book where a cartoonish stereotype of a Yankee based on Mark Twain's opinions at the time somehow time travels back to Camelot. And there's this, without spoiling too much of it, because it's brilliantly written, there's this moment where this Yankee guy is in King Arthur's court and he meets Merlin, and he has this realization where he says, "Holy shit, this guy thinks he's a real magician, even though he obviously is not." So there's like, yeah, there may be some self-delusion going on there. And that's a really good point. That also comes into play in a big way, or it leaves us some big questions. But to answer that original question, depending on circumstances, there will be processes for handling or disposing a body of things go south. But the issue here is that unless somebody is somehow in on an operation or an initiative, you probably, if you're a spy, you probably wouldn't tell them, right? You wouldn't tell them anything because you don't want to be, ooh, my spooky government friend. You want to be, you know, your local neighborhood skinny
podcaster.
Yeah, so it does sound weird, though, the way you recount it, because it sounds really specific. And she does this. Whatever he has told her, she has digested it. She believes it. So she leaves his body, dips off to Oregon with an employee of hers who is an assistant. And they're gone for about a week and a half, 2 weeks, just letting things blow over. They come back. And they're over, you know, they're at the Palisades, and they say, and then Catherine is thinking, holy smokes, this vehicle is still here. It's in the same spot. How long is it going to take his, you know, people or whatever they are to pick him up? Let's leave it right there, because now we have to start asking ourselves, hold on, rewind. Who is Jeffrey Alan Lash? Most immediately, how did he actually die? He just got hot? He got hot to death?
And why on earth do they use dry ice to try and cool him down? That's an odd flex as well.
Well, I mean, it would just, the cooling effect is,
I would think you would use regular ice so you could actually put it directly in contact with the skin. Dry ice burns if you put it on your skin.
That's why they needed the blankets, Noel. Come on.
Oh, sorry. Excuse me.
So there was more going on with Lash's body and his health than was immediately known. So according to Los Angeles Police Deputy Chief Kirk Albanese, he said detectives didn't believe, at least after they examined the body, even though it was in a state of decay, they didn't believe that he had died from foul play of any kind. At least initially, that's what they believed. That's what they observed. This deputy chief also said that the man was suffering from end stage cancer. So there's a reason why, you know, just being hot could have been a problem. There's a reason why maybe his body was overheating. He was going through it for real.
Mm-hmm. And doesn't appear to have been undergoing chemotherapy or some of the other treatments, because chemotherapy would have noticeable visual effects on the body.
Yeah, they were going a different route, according to much of the reporting, what we would learn later. He was eating a very specific diet, taking some supplements and some other things.
You know, I actually had a piano teacher when I was younger who had this type of cancer, and she did the same thing. She ate lots of foods that were high in certain nutrients, and she ate a lot of carrots. And it actually was, I remember her remarking on it, and I noticed she was eating so many carrots that her skin actually took on this kind of orangish hue. But she did that completely in place of more traditional, I guess, you know, Western remedies.
Yeah, I mean, that's a true story. That's a real thing that can happen. If you eat enough carrots, your skin will start to show. Jeffrey Alan Lash seemed to be more of a raw meat and juices guy at this point. But you're right, you know, and it's an understandable, frightening thing in the grips of illnesses that are, you know, going to be considered terminal for any number of reasons. People will naturally and logically reach out to any possible glimmer of hope. Any treatment, especially as mortality or the moment of death approaches. Side note, unrelated, when I say terminal conditions here in the U.S., I think we also have to acknowledge that there are curable conditions that are terminal for the vast majority of people because they are too expensive.
Right.
To fix. Yeah, which is something that future historians will not look back on with a very high opinion of society. That's not a political thing. That's just true. And I'm going somewhere with this. It's not just the soapbox. You can die of completely curable things because you do not have enough money or a credit line to survive. There's very much a price put on the average American life. But this should not have applied to Jeffrey Alan Lash. He lived in a very wealthy neighborhood. He had tons of rich man's toys, right? And we haven't even gotten into his weird cars yet. And he just had hundreds of thousands of dollars sitting around. The guy could have gone to treatment centers. So he made a personal choice. Maybe it's for privacy, or maybe, you know, maybe he did in the course of his own research, like your piano teacher, maybe he became convinced that there was a hidden cure, right? Or there was something less damaging to the body than chemotherapy that he could have done. Anyway, one of the big...
Don't think he had insurance, Ben.
No, right? No. Paper trail. That's true. Yeah, he would have been paying cash out of pocket because he always paid with cash.
It would have been that Magic Johnson style injection from South Park. Anyone?
Maybe. No? Yeah. Right. I remember that one. Well, also, this is another, I know I'm taking us on tangents, sorry, but this is another thing maybe not everybody realizes about some of the very well-to-do people, probably people a few atmosphere levels of wealth above Lash, as far as we know. After a certain threshold of income and wealth, you don't go to the doctor. You have a doctor on retainer for 24 hours a day, 7 days a week. They just come when you call. They will show up at your house. You pay them a lot of money. Also write you whatever prescription you want. It's pretty great healthcare. But going back to Albanese and the question of how he died, you know, was this foul play? Was this homicide? He says something really interesting. He publicly says, we are also certain that Lash did not work for any government security agency. And so for his neighbor,
at least there's no record of it.
There's no record of it. Yeah, right. Different thing. That's smart. That's a really good point. But then there's still so many questions. You know, where do you get this money? Where do you come from? Why do I have so many names? Why do I have so many guns? You know what I mean? And why do they all appear to be legal? And when did he get the guns? That's another thing.
Ooh, yeah. When and how?
And a gentleman by the name of Jeffrey Dwyer, who's the president of one of many Pacific Palisades homeowners associations, he was the president of the fourth chapter, said that there were no signs to be seen of hoarding guns or ammunition during a 2011 repair and inspection in this townhouse where Lash lived. And the neighbors didn't necessarily know Lash's real name. They thought that he was called Bob Smith, which sounds like the most lazy pseudonym imaginable. But this guy seems like he had a weird kind of dark streak in terms of his sense of humor and the way he, you know, gave out just enough weird information to his neighbors to seem mysterious and dangerous, like you said, Ben. And according to Dwyer, the homeowner group never had a reason to question whether Bob Smith was his real name because Nebron Gorin owned the townhouse. So he was just like living there, you know, as her guest, essentially.
Yeah, he was very, very smart. It's a very effective way of obscuring ownership or keeping yourself off of government records. And from a social engineering aspect, it's brilliant because it all depends on like what people think is polite and diplomatic in conversation. And so when you're looking at the social dynamic between neighbors, even if you own the, even if you're on the homeowners association, you're probably not going to ever say to your neighbor, "So what's going on in your relationship, man? I see your girlfriend actually owns the house. Is that something you want to talk to me about?" You would never say that. That's so rude.
Oh, and it would never even need to come up. You know what I mean? If they basically acted as a unit, as a couple, even if, you know, and the thing is, you can be someone's fiance for like ever, right? So, but that still is enough that the cover story totally checks out. Even if there were some details that were super sketchy, like the dude's 12 cars that he kept around. How do you even keep 12 cars in a townhouse? Doesn't seem like there'd be enough parking for that. Seems like you have to have a separate garage. But one of them appeared to be bulletproof and worth around $100,000. And then another one was like a specialty custom job that appeared to be designed to go. Ben, you questioned whether maybe it was an underwater car, but at the very least, it was a highly waterproofed vehicle, right?
Yeah, so it was described that way, and it has been described that way in a lot of different places. And just a note here, these are storage units, where like storage garages, essentially where these vehicles were stored in many places.
That makes sense.
And there are also, well, we won't talk about it now. There are apparently a lot of storage units associated with Jeffrey Allen Lash.
Mm-hmm. And to the point about, yeah, I didn't mean to be snarky when I was talking about the underwater vehicle because, okay, here's why. So reading about this underwater vehicle, I'm thinking, oh, this is so cool. Maybe we are getting into some James Bond territory, even if this guy is a little deluded. It's funny. I read some statements by that lawyer we mentioned earlier, Braun. And Braun is, of all the things he's skeptical about, he's weirdly skeptical about that car. He's like, they say it's an underwater car, and that's amazing, but it's not like a submarine or something. I think maybe you could drive through a river. Like, that's how he talks about it. He disses the car.
Well, I mean, you know, and let's not mince words here. I mean, most cars are pretty much waterproof. But just in general, like you can drive through a torrential downpour and you're not going to have leakage in your car, but the undercarriage is the part that you don't want to get wet. So that would be a part that would probably have to be specially designed to be sealed.
I think it's exactly it. I think it's an amphibious car, so it's probably more meant to just float or help you ford a stream, a creek, or a river, or maybe just have a weird day on the lake.
That's still freaking cool.
It's pretty cool.
Yeah, it is.
It's pretty cool. And it's very James Bond-esque. I mean, and the bulletproof car, dude, and the fact that he and his fiance would always go to dinner separately in separate vehicles and always pay cash. That was something that was noted of them.
And somehow they got away without using license plates.
Yes, that's what I wanted to talk about.
Yeah, that's amazing, isn't it? That they got away for so long without getting pulled over.
So exactly. So according to that freelancer who wrote for Playboy, they had a scheme essentially where they would trade in vehicles after a certain amount of time. So they always had dealer plates. So, you know, you get that leeway between after you get a new car or a used car, whatever it is, you got a dealer plate for a certain amount of time before you have to get actual plates.
Dude, I get pulled over the day after my birthday for having an expired tag. How do you get away with that for so long? That just seems like cheating fate, you know?
Well, if it looks like a new car, then the authorities would have no reason to even think about checking your plate.
I mean, yeah, that is true. But
you're in the Palisades, remember?
Right. So the police are going to be a little bit more deferential as long as you look like you belong. But the is probably based on honestly how nice your car is, mm-hmm. I imagine. But you're right. It is a different world. I also tend to get pulled over for a lot of that stuff. I was going through something a number of years ago where I was just really lazy. I kept forgetting to put that little sticker you get in Georgia on the plate. And I was so lazy that I had it in my glove box. And I got pulled over twice, but in both times the police were sort of annoyed. They were like, it's a sticker, man. Just put it on your, like, before you drive away. The second time the guy was like, just before you drive away, just put this on. Like, I have other stuff to do. so I can understand how those little things could be a hassle, but the point is they were putting time and energy and assiduous thought into not ever having to interact with the DMV. They were buying these cars cash as well, we should mention, so that there was not a payment plan. There's no loan business that comes in. Everything that this guy is doing is completely meant to prevent him from being documented. And did we mention that he freaked out around cameras like a vampire with mirrors?
Yeah, just ducking all the time, doing the old cough into the arm move. We don't know if that's what he did.
The old paparazzi shuffle, so that's called.
I thought he covered his face and did like one eye peeking. We're painting him as a very mature person. Yeah. Actually, he sounds like a lot of fun at this point.
I know. Gosh, I'm really sad I never got to meet this guy. But hey, speaking of meeting him, let's take another break, hear a word from our sponsor. And when we come back, we'll get into more of the biographical details of what we know about Jeffrey Allen Lash or Bob Smith.
And we have returned. So we know a little bit about his background now. We know he grew up in a middle-class lifestyle in a modest family home in near the LA airport. For a while, he wanted to be a microbiologist like his father, and his mother was a piano teacher. But then around the time he dropped out of college, according to his stepmother, Shirley Anderson, he cut himself off from his family. He became super sketch and very secretive about what he was doing. And his stepmother and his father had no reliable way of contacting him. He would just sort of drift in every so often in person. You know what I mean? Never calling on the phone, just in person. And then he was gone again.
He would show up like 2 days before Thanksgiving, but never on Thanksgiving.
Which is kind of brilliant if you think about it.
Yeah.
I hate that. Nothing worse than someone showing up early to a holiday.
Yeah. So we have a quote from his stepmother. She says, he was just a loner. As far as we were concerned, he just became weird because he changed all of a sudden.
He just became weird. That's about right.
I can't talk to you on the phone anymore, mother. I've become weird.
I've become weird. I've changed all of a sudden.
Okay, well, let us know if you need anything, sweetheart.
Absolutely not. Yeah.
But I'll see you 3 days before Thanksgiving. I'll come with a fresh pumpkin, freshly baked pumpkin pie.
I just love that. I love, you know what? Do you think, just between like the five of us hanging on the show today, do you think we could get away with using I've become weird or I've become strange as an excuse to get out of social conversation? I can't milk COVID forever.
I'm so sorry, guys. I can't. I'm going to have to stop this right here. I've become weird.
Yeah. Right. Like, hey, do you want to go get some wings with us later after work, Ben? I'm sorry. I can't make it. I've become strange.
Let me stop you right there. But, there is an interesting connection, you know, with the family here to this perhaps metamorphosis. When Lash's father was dying, Anderson said that she was unable to reach Lash, who never came to the funeral, not even 3 days early, which would have been weird. Anderson said, which, you know, in character for him, Anderson said that she was unaware of any, like, you know, independent wealth that he might have accrued that would allow Lash to purchase these millions of dollars in weapons.
Just a reminder, that's the stepmother, mm-hmm. Shirley Anderson.
That's right. And whatever this secret job might have been, if it even existed, he definitely had money. And do we know much about his fiance? Because I'm sorry, something about that name just makes me think wealth. I don't know why. A hyphenate name always makes me think wealth.
Yeah, we do, because before she was his fiancée, she was married to she was married to a dentist, I believe. And
yeah,
when Lash moved in with her, she and the dentist were still living together. That's why her name was Nebron Gorin. And eventually he drove the two apart. She was a business owner, Catherine Nebron Gorin was, and she did pretty well for herself. She owned several different properties throughout the area. Business was booming. She was, to some, a success story, which I think is objectively true. And then to a certain type of person, she was a ripe target. But the point about the family is really interesting because it's kind of a badger in the bag, right? An elephant in the room. When we hear stories about very eccentric people who seem to have a lot of stuff and get away with a lot of things, one of the first questions you have to ask yourself is there family money at play, right? Like when you read stories about, who was that guy? Was he a DuPont heir? You know what I'm talking about? He was into wrestling.
Oh, the Foxcatcher guy you're talking about?
Yeah. Wasn't he from family money?
I believe that's right.
Yeah, I just remember recreations of the house from the movie reenactment of those events, but it was lovely.
Yeah, well, that's the thing. I mean, it's true. Like, you have to ask yourself, is there family money at play? Yeah.
Because the father did just die.
And the father did just die. So there was a question for a time of whether there was an inheritance in the mix. Anderson, the stepmother, says that there was not. And this is of great interest to the investigators because she also says, I don't know where he got the money from. And that's what they're looking for, right? Because there should be some sort of way to account for these massive amounts of cash. You know, even if it's something illicit, right? If it, like, for a while there was a suspicion that maybe he was a former drug dealer, maybe at kingpin level, who just got out of the game. And that would explain why the cash was so old. What do we call it? Lash stash was so old.
Yeah.
But this didn't seem to be the case. So no one knows where the money was from.
I would say that scenario also would make a lot of sense for why he absolutely didn't want to be tracked and identified.
Yeah. I think we could say it here on this show. We don't think he was narco. We don't think that he was. Well, he definitely wasn't currently a drug dealer, but he may have been involved in the past. There are just a lot of missing spots in his biography. But police know that he had to, like, at this point, before they've gotten a evaluation of just the firearms from the lawyers, police initially look at all this stuff and they say, okay, this is at least $500,000, depending on how you bought it. You know what I mean? Off the grid. This is before they were able to spend the time tracing everything. And then later sources come back and they say, actually, this is more like $5 million just for the guns. The condo itself, we know the value of it from, well, at the time of this investigation, 2015, 2016, and so on. We know the value of the condo from the last time it was sold, which was 1991, where it was worth almost $500,000. Because of the location it's in, that price has surely spiked by 2015.
I wonder how many millions that actually would be. That's crazy.
I think you subtract 2008, whenever the crash happened, and then you just add 7.
You know, I've been on Zillow a lot. Give me an address. I'll tell you how much it costs right now.
You're a Zillow guy now?
I'm such a Zillow guy. Zillow, it'll make you feel really bad about your current situation.
I saw some page, I can't remember what it was online, but it was called Zillow Gone Wild.
Yeah.
And it's just...
What?
it's just weird houses on Zillow.
Houses your mother would be ashamed of.
houses you can't take home to meet your parents.
There you go.
So this is, you know, we have some levity, but there are some dark things coming up. Whatever the official story is, or whatever story he was pushing, It is clear that Lash may have been sick for some time. He was 60 years old at the time of his death, and shortly before passing away, he had told Catherine Nebrin-Gorin that he was suffering from terminal cancer. He did add that this was a result of exposure to mysterious, dangerous chemicals in the course of his career as a spy or an operative. And he had been acting so very sketchy for so very long. He was always careful to tantalize people, to never tell them exactly what he did for a living, but to drop mysterious hints in and just in conversation, right? And it's weird because the way that he talks to people about this, or the way they recount conversations with him, it sounds like he is trying to bait people into asking him more so that he can say, you know, I can't say anymore. You know what I mean? He wants to be that Dos Equis, most interesting man. This doesn't work out for him, as you know. That's why we started with the death. But this is part one of our examination of the story. We know it sounds a little crazy right now. Where are we at? We've got an unsolved death, and we've got questions that seem to mount as the investigation continues. Can we answer any of these questions? Well, we'll give it a shot in part two of this episode. In the meantime, we want to know what you think. Have you ever heard of Jeffrey Allen Lash? Do you have other stories of mysterious deaths that you would like to share with your fellow conspiracy realists? If so, let us know. We try to be easy to find online.
That's right. You can find us at Conspiracy Stuff on Twitter and Facebook, Conspiracy Stuff Show on Instagram. Why don't you do us a solid, too, and pop on over to Apple Podcasts and leave a review. 5-star review, if you please. We appreciate it, and it helps people discover the show and helps it kind of bump up in those Apple rankings.
Yes. And also, just to add this in before we get out of here and we tell you about a couple other contact methods, I keep thinking about this concept that he wasn't a part, or at least it was confirmed that he wasn't a part of any kind of drug running scheme or like a drug lord of any kind. It keeps sticking in my mind just how clean his life was, even with all of those guns, even with all the cash and all the weird cars and all the stuff, how clean his life was. And it feels like, to me, that's almost a reaction to being in a life where, you know, none of your money is legitimate. You can't spend any of your cash. You can't do anything with it. So you find a way to clean it. You find a way to live a life that is where you could actually use your wealth for whatever you wanted. And if somebody looked at you, you wouldn't get in trouble. Anyway, well, I'm sorry. We don't have to talk about this now. Ugh.
Oh, we will. Okay. stay tuned, folks. And that's a great, that I'm really glad that you're pointing that out, because after a certain threshold, being too clean can be almost as bad as having some believable priors. So we're going to hold for that. We want to hear what you think about situations like this. Also, if you want to learn more about people who have ditched their identities or committed pseudocide, faking one's death, then do check out, there's an excellent book, Plain Dead. We can talk a little bit more about how people try to transform their personalities, how to, some do's and don'ts, maybe. We'll throw some of those in. But we want to hear from you. Give us a call at 1-833-STDWYTK. Tell us, what should we shoot for? Tell us about times you had a different identity. maybe for a few hours, maybe for a few days. Let us know if we can use your name or a cool nickname on the air. You've got 3 minutes. They belong to you. If you have a story that is longer than 3 minutes, I assume that faking your death or living under a different identity would be more than a 3-minute story. Feel free to write it out in full and send it to us as a good old-fashioned email, where we are
conspiracy@iheartradio.com.
Stuff They Don't Want You to Know is a production of iHeartRadio. For more podcasts from iHeartRadio, visit the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you listen to your favorite shows.